Oh, hi, it's Mac here. It's McCoggan and Audio Boo, and it is Thursday, the 21st of February, 2013. Recently, I've been browsing through the Audio Boo channels, and amongst the excellent BBC channels, I came across one yesterday dedicated to Rory Kirtland-Jones. Many of you will know that name fairly well. And within that channel, I came across an interview that Rory carried out recently with Brian Eno, of music fame, and Brian discusses his music, his new creation on music called Scape, along with his partner Peter Chalvers. And Brian relates to Rory how the project came about, what it's all about, and how he hopes to see it develop. But also within this interview, Brian carries on to talk about the music industry as it is today, how he perceives that it's the changes, how he perceives the future. And he relates also the fact that some people in the music industry really need to waken up and see what's happening with music and move with the times before they are left behind. So the original interview, which I will attach here, is around 30 minutes long. There is an abbreviated version which lasts for 5 minutes, but I felt that the whole edition, the whole recording, would be far nicer to hear. And so I will put a link in to both Rory Kirtland-Jones's channel and also to a YouTube video explaining what Scape is all about.
Brian Eno, just tell us about the creative process which brought about Scape.
So this grew out of, well, some experiments that I guess I've been conducting for about 30 years now, something like that, in self-generating music. And it's a collaboration between myself and Peter Chalvers, who separately at first and now together has been working on the same sort of problems. So the idea of making a music that, instead of specifying in complete detail like a composer normally would, what we're trying to do is to make a system that produces music, that makes music that we didn't quite predict. So obviously we've designed the parameters of the system, and therefore we have some idea what kind of music will come out of it. But each time somebody uses this, there'll be a different version of the music. And in fact, with this particular piece, Scape, there's a huge amount of variability possible.
So there are two elements. There are scapes, musical creations that the user of this app can create, and then there's an album. This is partly just another album, isn't it?
Yeah. So there's an album in here that we've made together using this tool, this machinery, this system. I don't quite know what to describe it as because it's rather ambiguous what its real nature is. And we've done that partly because we're proud of the music that it makes, but also because we wanted to give some examples of what kind of thing can be made with it. And we were also anxious to sort of point out to people that you don't have to crowd the piece of music to make something worthwhile, that you can make actually some good pieces with very few elements. There are a lot of elements in here, and you don't have to use many to start making some good music.
Now, obviously, this is very different from a traditional album. What does it say about your kind of musical and technological journey?
It's sort of the culmination of some things that I've been thinking about for a long time. When I was making music like Music for Airports, which came out at the end of the 70s, what I was really doing was setting up a system to produce music and then recording a little bit of the music and releasing that recording. What I really was interested in was the system. I would really have loved to be able to release the system to people so that they can use it and it produces music which doesn't repeat, basically.
It's kind of open source music, in a funny way.
Yes, it's right. It's an endless source, actually, of music. But of course, there was no way of doing that. I made that piece of music in the case of Music for Airports, I made it by making long tape loops and running them round chairs, round a studio, and so on and so on. It was a big, complicated thing to do. So I sold, when I made the record, I sold a recording of a piece of that process. But the process is potentially infinite. It would keep generating new music forever and ever and not repeating. That was what always intrigued me. And so in the 90s, I started working with computers on this problem. Actually, about the same time that Peter started working in game design, doing music for games, and starting to deal with the same issues himself. He didn't want to have regularly repeating loops of music. He wanted music that was evolving in some way or another. So we didn't know each other then, but we were separately working on this thing and starting to use computers as the solution to the problem. But they were only really a temporary solution, because the idea of actually sitting at a desk and listening to music on a computer struck me as so mind-numbingly boring that I never want to release any of that. So it wasn't really until this came along, this technology, which people sort of regard as an entertainment technology, and they can carry it around, they're comfortable with it, they don't have to be in secretarial mode to use it. That's when it really started to take off.
Can this kind of innovation really provide a way forward for other artists? Is this a kind of one-off, a kind of slightly quirky avenue up which you've walked, or can you see other musicians making a go of it?
Definitely, yes. I think it's a way of working that a lot of people, well, are starting to use. You know, when I started making those kinds of records, it looked definitely like one person's work that nobody else would ever be interested in. But now it has whole sections in record shops, you know, called ambient. That's what happened to that idea. So I think the fact that people like the results means that a lot of other people will start wanting to work that way.
Commercially, does it work? Do lots of people buy these apps in the same way as lots of people would buy your albums when they were on CD or vinyl?
The first app we did was called Bloom, and that has outsold almost all of my albums in terms of numbers. So the answer is yes. This one is only just out, so we don't know yet.
In terms of the wider music industry and how it is adapting to the digital age, how do you see that? Is it finally beginning to adapt well?
Well, of course, it's a struggle. It's a very difficult set of problems. Like the whole issue of copyright is very, very difficult. You know, we have to think about all of that, whether that can still work and how it should work. I think the music industry initially was very slow to understand what was going on and very slow to realise that it had to change dramatically, or else people would just take what they wanted for free. That's really the issue, whether the music industry somehow manages to retain some kind of control over what's done, or whether they make everybody so angry that they take everything for nothing. And so I think iTunes has proven to be quite a good solution. That's now the music industry as well. It's funny that it came out of a computer company rather than out of a record company.
And what about Spotify and streaming services like that? Do you use them? Do you have
I don't use them that much. I don't have a very ideological position on them, except that I think Spotify pays people quite poorly. I think their business model isn't good in that respect. You know, if you were trying to make a living out of having your stuff played on Spotify, I think you'd have to have 4 million plays a month to make minimum wage. There are so many different solutions going on at the moment, and it's like an evolutionary struggle to see which ones are actually going to prove to be worthwhile. I think iTunes has shown itself to be a successful model. And the App Store, actually. You know, the App Store is wonderful if you're an app developer, because you make something and within days it's out, as opposed to the 4 or 5 months that normally happens with a record company between you finishing something and it appearing. They pay promptly, and you know exactly what they're paying. There's no loopholes in the contract. It's quite a simple deal. So I think that's a very good model for what the future of the music business could be like.
What about the consumers? What about this generation of music fans and users? Does it upset you that there seems to be this feeling that you can get music for free and maybe that's perfectly okay?
It's not one of the things in the world that upsets me a lot. I have to say, there are a lot of other things that I'm much more fed up about. What I think is that if people don't finance bands to make very expensive albums by buying them, then people will stop making expensive albums. That doesn't seem to me a disaster, really.
You don't really worry too much about illegal downloading. You're not too concerned about that being a threat to your industry?
I'm not really. Partly because I think that, I mean, the new music industry will think I'm being very disloyal saying this, but what you see happening is that as soon as it turns out that there's no money in one area, people develop another one. For instance, the astonishing thing about the last few years is that the number of live performances has multiplied by a huge factor. I don't know what it is, but there are so many more performances now because there's so much more money in performing than in making records. So from the point of view of people who like hearing music, it's quite a blessing, actually. There's suddenly a live scene like there hasn't been for years and years. And the other thing that's happened, of course, is that people have realised that if music is all you're selling, you're on a sticky wicket, actually. So as a result, people now start thinking about packaging and what goes around the music. What are we actually selling? And most albums now are released in 5 or 6 different forms, you know, the deluxe, the super deluxe, the collectors, the vinyl, you know, all of these different forms. And I must say that of all the musicians I know, I don't hear anybody either saying, God, I'm out of a job now because of the internet. I haven't heard anybody say that ever. And I haven't heard anybody saying, I wish those young people would stop listening to my music if they're not prepared to pay for it.
You've been in the business quite a long time now. If you look back to when you started and to now, do you feel more optimistic about the shape of the industry? When you're involved in these sort of innovative projects than you did when you started out?
I feel much more optimistic about the prospects for music, because one of the huge bottlenecks in culture has actually disappeared. You know, the kind of A&R department of record companies used to be the bottleneck, and of radio stations and media in general. Somebody at the end of the chain, after all this creative ferment had gone on, at the end of the chain, somebody was deciding what got played and what didn't, or what got released and what didn't. And that's disappeared now. You know, we were in the situation of Hollywood, the Hollywood films still are now, where you have to have these big deals with distributors and cinemas and so on and so on. And as a result, only Brad Pitt ever gets seen or something, you know. But now we're in a completely new situation where all the time bands are appearing out of nowhere. Somebody directs you to a site on MySpace and you think, amazing. You know, I just curated a festival in Norway, and several of the people I had playing in the festival didn't have record deals. They're people that I'd found, or somebody had mentioned to me that they've got a site on MySpace or somewhere else, and you hear them. The bottleneck has gone, basically. So suddenly there's more interesting music around than ever before in my life, I think. I'm amazed at how much stuff there is now of quality.